Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it's Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, ready to fill you in on everything that has gone on in the Geekverse while I have been away for a couple weeks. Took a bit of a break. It was needed. It was necessary. And while I was gone, holy crap, like the floodgates opened up and trailers, news, rumors, all sorts of nonsense has been released. And I'm going to help you through all of the minutiae and stuff that I thought that was, you know, just kind of funky, funny, like scratch your head, weird type stuff, you know, that kind of thing. We are sponsored by Suzy Q's, one of the most magnificent jewelry makers you will ever find this side of Saturn. She does some incredible, colorful, unique work. It never fails. Studio line goes off. Anyway, Suzy is absolutely gifted in the world of jewelry. The post has her link directly to the website, suzyqs.com. Follow her on Instagram. She's always posting some of her new unique creations, what's new. Just what she produces is absolutely stunning, unique. And if you're looking for that one piece for someone or for yourself, Suzy Q's is where you want to go. She's just so sweet and fun to talk to. And with the cons, like, on permanent hiatus, that's usually where she goes. It's usually where you will find her. Because I think this year was her first time she did Chicago, and they put her in some funky little spot. So she may or may not return to Chicago if Chicago Con happens. We'll see. C2E2, that is. And, yeah, it remains to be seen. And in fact, all of the cons have just kind of evaporated. There is the All Seas Fan Expo that will be happening the first weekend in October. And of course, Rocky Mountain Con, where we will be set up at both. And Jerry will be on our table for All Seas. And of course, Red will be returning to the con scene at Rocky Mountain Con. She will be on the table with all of her latest in Boo stuff for you. In addition, oh my god, so she's got her channel that's going on very well. Go over and check it out. It's called Stationary Play. She puts some incredible videos together that are, you know, fun to watch. And, you know, she's staying busy during the pandemic, the same as all of us. So go check out Red's stuff. But those are the cons that you'll be able to here in town to check us out if you're local. If you're not, sorry, we'll post some pictures. We'll make it interactive. Always send us questions. Thank you for listening. Share, like, and I'll be sure to get to your questions as soon as you ask them. So moving on to everything, my first big hurrah is, of course, okay, holy moly's over. I'm sad. I'm broken up. It was very interesting for the, you know, $250,000 putt. And okay, sure, I get it. I mean, there's this huge buildup for this great, huge, you know, final golf, you know, mini golf course. And it was just kind of wah, wah. But I think that was the whole point, the huge buildup. And then it was just rather just lackluster. It was actually really kind of funny. They are taking applications or submissions for contestants for season 3. So you know what that means. That's right. Holy moly, the third hole. I cannot wait till next summer already. I know I might be the only one who really digs this show, but come on, what's not to love? Even Rob Riggle's funny in this. I can't take him on some of the other shows that I've seen him, but this is actually really, him and Tessitore are a really good mashup. In other news, speaking of shows, my favorite, The Masked Singer, is returning. September 23rd is the date that they're posting. The costumes look extremely outlandish. There is one where they're a pair of owls in an egg. And I don't know how that's going to work? I mean, because, correct me if I'm wrong, when you're singing duets, it does help to see the other person's facial cues, and so you can kind of look at each other. So how are you going to do that in a mask? Yeah, okay. I will be curious to see if they're not, like, the first ones eliminated. Because if they go, how do they go and split the statue at the end? I just see a bird fight waiting to happen. Anyway, they did do a little special on who the masks, not under the masks, but the costumes. And there are some extremely creative, colorful, outlandish costumes. Go to Fox Masked Singer. I know they've got a couple of them posted up. I'm not going to post any of the pictures because it's just too much. Too much, too much. I'm curious to see if they've learned anything from the last season and the breakdowns about you know, the face-offs and all of that. So we'll see. I'm curious if they walked away with stuff. And how they did the filming with all of COVID and all of that. I'm sure the live audience is not there, which kind of takes away from the experience. I mean, because you really do, if you get the audience involved, I mean, that's kind of huge. And then how are you going to do the voting? Because the voting happens from the audience. That's not going to whack them right then. So that's just going to be... It's going to be very weird. Can't wait to see what they do. While I was away, there has been some humongous news. First, before we get to that, movie news, the Dune trailer landed, and wow, holy crap. I mean, that's really all I can say is just holy crap. If there is one franchise, book, sci-fi idea that needed the technology to catch up to it, I would have to say that it is Dune. At least Star Wars, as the years have progressed, they have progressed the technology. They have found a way to make it work, and in that have added to the look and the feel for the franchise, for the series. But Dune is just so, I don't know, I don't want to say outlandish and just out there, but it really feels, when you're reading, like, when you've read Dune, if you have, it just really feels just out there, just like a whole entirely different world. And I know that sounds a bit redundant when you're saying sci-fi, because that's the whole point, but it just really so far removed from what you would expect of, you know, Earth or human civilization. Just, it's just like right teetering on that edge of oblivion. And to try and get that look and feel and the technology that is in the books, it's just, I'm excited that it's finally going to have the proper representation and look that the books and this film deserve. So the trailer and the costuming and all of it is just, wow. So it can't come soon enough. I know we posted the trailer up there, and we'll see as we get closer. Hopefully it will go into the theaters, because I know Black Widow has been sidelined for the immediate future. I know they don't want to do a release on Disney Plus because that story is coming up, as far as numbers and all that fun stuff. So we'll get to that momentarily. But in other streaming news, there was Star Trek Day, and that was last week. It was interesting. I like that everyone is trying to do their own kind of streaming Comic-Con type service to get fans at least engaged. And all of the news that, you know, they would normally say for Comic-Con or C2E2 or all of the other stuff that's been going on, they, you know, they're having to do it their own way. And DC's a perfect example. I mean, there was the fandom a couple weeks ago, and they did it again just this last weekend. That one was not as impressive. It was just kind of like an afterthought of like, hey, we were really bad on time management, and here's like the leftover scraps, or we probably should really rethink what we do next time, and, you know, here's the TV side of it, which it's fine. I know we won't see a lot of the DC shows until 2021 because of delays and trying to get crew back together, because there are members of the, you know, show not coming back that they have to adjust for, and everybody's schedules and all of that. So the DC fandom was this week was okay, but what Star Trek did was actually kind of cool. We saw some stuff for Discovery, which absolutely is got me on board. See what I did there? And it is absolutely so enticing because we're going further than any Star Trek show or thought has taken us this far. With going this far into the future, we're past Picard's, way past Picard's era, and what has happened to humans? What's happened to the galaxy, the universe? Where are we? So to see this far into the future, what the vision, what will we take away? Looks absolutely enticing. It's a spectacular feel for the show, and it's absolutely where this show probably needed to go. So to see the characters, to see the trailer is just yay. I'm glad they saved it for Star Trek Day. Absolutely well done. Well played. Star Trek Discovery will be returning October 15th, and it's only on the CBS streaming. They've got quite the little, you know, hold up going on right there. I mean, Below Decks is going on. I've seen better reviews for cereal boxes. I've seen better cereal boxes in the show. I mean, this show is just really, I'm not, it's not for me. Let's just put it that way. Maybe you'll get it. I know while we're doing trivia on Wednesdays over at Outworld, Brett Leader 1 and I have been talking with Brian, who's all about it, and he's just absolutely gets a kick out of it. He's like, you at least need to watch it if you're a Trekkie. And I'm like, no. No, you don't. It's okay. But Below Decks may or may not be for you. If it is, let me know. What? Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe you've got something, you know, a hook on it that I don't, because But with Discovery coming back, Picard definitely in the works. There is so much going on for this streaming service. If they can continue to produce, you know, shows like this, I mean, I don't want to add another streaming service, but damn it, they're making it hard. I don't have a choice. Because Picard is worth it. Just that alone. That right there. Now I add Discovery, which is definitely taking it up a pace or two. So worth it. So as we see this come closer on October 15th, and October is closer than you think, because it seems like September is going by rather quickly, because we're already at halfway point of the month. So, yikes. Yeah, October will be here before you know it. In other TV news, this is sad. This broke my heart. But at the same point, this should have happened a while ago, and I know Red and Private Cheeseburger would agree with me on this. The Walking Dead is ending with season 11. The Walking Dead is officially ending after its 11th season. There will be a supersized season offering the show a 24-episode farewell tour, and it's airing beginning in the fall of 2021. The 24-episode run will span the entire fall season, and then we'll finally finish off in 2022. So I guess they haven't decided on whether or not it's going to be broken up into, you know, 3 8-part segments or 2 12-part halves. AMC is still being kind of tight-lipped, but they basically have come out and just said, okay, this is it for The Walking Dead. And you know what? It's sad, but at the same point, I think they missed their cue. What they should have done is, yeah, listen to me. What they should have done, okay, spoiler alert, Rick's dead. Both in the comic and in the show. If you've missed that, I apologize. I figured everybody kind of knew at this point what has happened. But when Kirkman finished the comic, I knew the show wasn't too far gone till its end. Losing Rick was, I think, the final thing. Kirkman getting into the writing room and just making a mess is the only thing that, you know, you can call it at this point, really did not help the show at all. I mean, Kirkman in there was the worst idea that anybody could have had. Kirkman should have just stayed on the comic, continued what you're doing, don't split your time. But I think he just wanted to be part of the action. He wanted to be one of the cool kids in there with all the rest of the cool kids playing zombies. Didn't work. And the show paid for it. So we'll see. I don't have any speculations. I have no idea how they're going to end this, because they can't end it like the comic. Because the characters that are in the comic aren't in the show anymore. In fact, I don't think there's a single character. Oh, there's... No? Because Michonne bounced. So, yeah. There's the whole final issue for Walking Dead. You really can't do it. Maybe. I guess you could. If... Yeah. Judith. Judith might be the way. Anyway. As far as what this means for the movies, however, that is a huge question mark. And Angela Kang, who is Walking Dead showrunner, is also saying that there may be a Daryl and Carol spinoff show. I don't know if that would work well. I mean, face it, there, if there's any chemistry left of the characters, it's between those two, because everyone else is just so fractured and separated from one another at this point. We have no idea what or who, and all the characters that we like have died or moved on. So we'll see how that works out. I don't think it would go well, because it would just be Daryl and Carol killing people and surviving. And yeah, that's just, no. If that's the case, I'll just go watch another zombie show. I mean, at least Fear the Walking Dead is also kind of intriguing with the characters. I tried watching it as per Brett Leader 1's suggestion. I should at least try. It's a hit or miss for me, because sometimes it's just like, eh. But other times there are some provocative moments. So, will I end up on Fear the Walking Dead? Most likely not. Walking Dead ends. That is it for me. I will be giving up AMC as a channel. And my zombie phase has officially come to its end. And I feel bad, because, I mean, let's face it, Walking Dead was such a juggernaut. And you don't want to say, see how the mighty have fallen, because this could happen to any show at any time. There could just be a hard left, and you lose everybody along the way. And I just think some of the decisions that they made for the characters were not always the right ones. Maybe just to continue a story, or to finish a thought, or to try and do something. But unfortunately, maybe The Walking Dead just outlived its group, its people. Sorry, it just walked on without you. Anyway, we'll keep you in the loop. There will be the final 10th season, the 10th season finale, which they're saying I think is supposed to air October 11th, and I think that was a tentative date that I had seen floating out there. But as we get closer to October, of course, I'll be reminding you. But mark October 11th as when we will see the final season-ending 10 cliffhanger episode of. They did kind of like a cool little teaser for it. Daryl just comes right out and just says, "Yeah, all of us are not going to survive." Just like, wow, okay, there's a hardcore truth. That's a truth, people. I'm telling you. Right here in River City. So, what else has been going on? That's a very good question. One of the best shows of all time has returned. Yes, that's right. The season 2 of The Boys. It is okay. So the funny thing is, everybody loves the show, but everybody's pissed about having to wait weekly for the next episodes, which is kind of funny. Even the executive producers are like, it's the show everybody hates right now, because how they have put this season together so far has been extremely irksome, because you want more. You want to binge the shit out of this show, without a doubt, because it is how they're unfolding everything as it comes. No spoilers. I won't wreck anything. But they have done an absolute shockingly good job of the show. I mean, just outright. Homelander is, holy shit, just a twisted mofo. Not to mention, just trying to catch up with what happened with Butcher and the boys, and it is just so, so good. So, they will be, and I know everyone's like, kind of like, well, what's happening? We want more. So it is going to be every Friday that the episode drops on Amazon. I know everyone was kind of, you know, freaking out, and I guess it's, some people were seeing it drop earlier than others, and of course this is probably two time zones, so everyone was kind of like around 8 a.m., you know, depending upon your time zone. It should be loaded in on Friday. And then it'll run all the way up until October 9th is what they're saying. It's only 8 episodes, which in my mind is not a season. It's not enough. At least give me 12. I am happy, though, that the runtime is at least over an hour. The last couple of episodes have run very longer than I was expecting, just to get the whole story. And you can tell they're doing it in chapters. They're specifically designed as far as how they're set up and how you're watching it. So, again, shockingly good. So good. Cannot imagine this show anywhere else, because, oh my God, the brutality. And, like I said, Homelander's just such a dick. He's better than the comic. I mean, these guys, Seth Rogen, when he sat down and put this together, must have been a huge fan of Garth Ennis' stuff, because this is just way beyond of the comic. I mean, it is a deep understanding, and just getting all of this together is just perfect. This is a comic. They don't even care if you know anything about the comic. This world doesn't need any explanation. You're in it. This is just the way it is. We'll explain as we go. And there's questions. There absolutely is questions. But they don't care. They just keep going with the story. And there are fillers. There's things you do have to kind of pay attention, because there are little kind of nuances and things that they slip in to explain what's going on. And episode 4 was absolutely right on the nose. I mean, it was everything I had hoped and anticipated, and a nice good curveball thrown in there. If you watched it, you know what I'm talking about. It is probably one of the best series running right now. I will have at some point to do my comparison between Umbrella Academy and The Boys, because it seems like these two shows are right where they need to be. They're firing on all their cylinders, and by far probably the best comic book adaptations of all time. I mean, just absolutely possible. These two have got the formula. They've got it figured out, and yeah, I can't wait. It's absolutely spectacular, if I haven't said that enough. Way enough. So, I prefaced this a little bit earlier when we came onto the podcast, and I'm going to get a little bit deeper into what's going on with Disney Plus, Marvel, and what's going on. So, you may or may not know this, but Mulan, and we talked about this, Mulan being released directly to Disney Plus. It was an additional cost of like $20 or $30. I think it was $30 to get it. Of course, if you can be patient and wait till December 4th, that's when it will be free on Disney Plus. But for those diehards, to drop the money in advance was the key. You had to be a subscriber, of course, already to Disney Plus, and it was made available to you. Now, Black Widow has looked like it's going to get pushed back. Same with, I think Wonder Woman now has also got the same rumor of, you know, they're pushing that one back too, just because of not being able to capitalize on the theater money. But when you see like Tenet, which is absolutely killing it at the theater because there's nothing out right now, it's almost like, well, I'd take the gamble. There's nothing out there to compete with. There's absolutely I don't even think Bill and Ted went directly to video. I think it may be in like one or two theaters, if at all. New Mutants was not what anybody was hoping for. I mean, it was better than the last X-Men film, but New Mutants kind of missed the mark, which was disappointing, especially looking so forward to that film. But the situation as it is right now is, okay, there's good and there's bad. Mulan leads to about a 68% spike in Disney app downloads. How this translates into a money is where it gets kind of dicey. So they see a spike in app downloads, but they don't release how much of that is relatable to, you know, sales for Mulan. So there's, I think they haven't really said, you know, what they've made on it. So everything has just kind of jumped in that regard. So the consumer spending on the app spiked 193%, which of course can be directly tied to the $30 Mulan fee. And the overall jump was 79% for the first 3 days of Hamilton. So there was a considerable increase, but not as much as you would get for like they got for Hamilton. So I think the kind of awareness and the newness is kind of slowly fading off. I don't think everyone is as enamored with the Disney platform as Disney was hoping they would be. And I know this is a huge gamble on their part by basically experimenting with Mulan. And why they chose this particular film to do it with, I'm not 100% sure. Because everything that I have seen as far as reviews and just fan reaction have been extremely positive. The film is a hit if you wanted to spend the $30. So, of course, I don't. I do not want to spend the $30. Call me a cheap bastard, but, you know, that's just the way it is. Now, what that means to all the rest of the Marvel stuff and all the rest of the Disney stuff. Quite simply this. They're not making the money that they had hoped. I honestly don't think that they would have been happy with really any increase. I mean, we would had to have seen like some astronomical 500% increase in app traffic to probably make Disney happy. But this isn't the platform. They're not doing it correctly. And I feel bad for the mouse, because let's face it, if there's one company that is probably taking it a beating right now, it is Disney. No one's at the theme parks. Their films aren't in the theaters. They've got all of this money out there in Fox properties, Marvel properties, all of this stuff that they own that they can't do anything with. It's like you finally get to drive your dad's car when you're a kid, but you can't find the keys. It's just going to sit there. And you're just going to, no. That's all it is. So Disney has all the toys, but no way of letting you play with them. So is the app worth it? Still on the fence. I really am. I mean, there are some pluses. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy the fact that I can, you know, stream all of the Spider-Man cartoons, all of the X-Men cartoons. They're, you know, definitely all of the Disney afternoon stuff from back in the day, which was fun. It was a trip down memory lane. But since then, I have moved on. I mean, Hulu, all of a sudden, out of the blue, ends up with the Thundercats from the 80s and the new cartoon that ran for like 24 episodes on Cartoon Network, or I forget which network. I think it was Cartoon Network, later on. So I'm kind of moved on. Boy, the dialogue is so bad on Thundercats. I'd forgotten. And as much as catchy as the theme song is, it is really just horrible. I want to not be that guy, but sometimes you can't go back. You really can't. The one theme song that I do still dig is Panthros, because it's just kind of all like jazzy and bluesy sounding, because he rolls up in his Thunder tank, which gets his ass handed to it all the time. But beside the point, I mean, Panthros probably got the coolest intro music. The rest of them, I mean, they try to get like all 90s tech with Tigra, but the series, just the dialogue and their approach to the more you know at the end of the episode is so cliched, so dated. It's still fun to watch, but that said, there's always going to be other shows. There's always going to be something else. And I think what Disney's hoping for is, you know, a hit. I think they're hoping for like a Boys or a Lock and Key or something. I mean, they've got The Mandalorian, which the trailer landed for season two. And holy shit. Oh, little baby Yoda. He's a rascal. Just got to watch the trailer. It's on the page. Go check it out. In fact, it went up before the podcast for today. So he's a rascal. He's a wily one, that little baby Yoda. The whole thing Disney, I mean, that, I think that's kind of like Disney and Sony have always been trying to find is a franchise that they can just latch on to and just run into the ground. I mean, Sony's been trying, you know, like Harry Potter-esque series forever. And with Spider-Man, and they just couldn't tell a decent story. Disney just decided to buy all of everything so that they could have these series, but they can't do anything with it until they figure out the platform. So, where it goes, who knows? But you're probably, for all intents and purposes, just get Black Widow and Wonder Woman at your mind. You're not going to see that until next year, if maybe not till the end of this year. I could see... You know what? I could see maybe if they got ballsy, if they got bold and did like a Thanksgiving-esque weekend release, just because it's going to be nonsense for Black Friday already, I could honestly see them maybe doing that. And that would be actually, that'd be a smart play in my book. That would be, because what else would you want to do? You don't want to go out, be shoulder to shoulder, wearing your masks, trying to practice social distancing, and do your Christmas shopping. Ugh. Go to a movie. What? Why not? Way better an idea. Ah, my opinion. What do I know? What? I was right about a few things. You should listen. And that said, that brings us to this week's Shakedown. I know it all. I got all the answers for you. They're right here. This week's Shakedown is actually it's something you don't even know about. It is an amazing, fun little project that Brett Leader One and his wife Jeannie have been part of. It is the new horror anthology that is actually being released today. I have an advanced copy because I'm lucky that way. And this is absolutely spectacular. I'm looking at it right now in front of me because I got to make sure I get the names correct, because you know how I am with names. This is also published by Hex Publishers, and it's flying under the Colorado Festival of Horror banner. It would have been available for the Festival of Horror, but since that got pushed off to next year, so did a lot of the plans. Now, the book is a huge conglomeration of talented and so many horror people. Oh my God. Of course, my favorite was, well, of course, Stephen Graham Jones, who've got a story in there from. Where is the one I'm looking for? course it's not. There it is. Kevin J. Anderson, of course, who we've had on the podcast briefly when we did the Straight Outta Deadwood anthology at Barnes & Noble, which was great. But his is actually the final story in the anthology, and it is perfectly fits this book. And the title of the book is It Came From the Multiplex, 80s Midnight Chillers. So the cover of the book looks like an old school, kind of like Ed Wood style cover where you've got big, huge legs, spider legs coming out from behind the chick sitting in the theater with the 3D glasses. And it looks like a old school VHS cover for the video rental. And it is really, really just impressive. I love the look. I love the feel. And, of course, the art that is in the book is done by Brett's son, who is absolutely, he's so talented. The foreword, of course, is by Brett and Jeannie, Brett Leader 1. And then you just basically just tear into a bunch of different stories. And it is so, so well done. I can't emphasize this enough. And especially with the golden age of horror that we are in right now, to actually be able to sit down with something fresh, and it really just feels like an old school 80s creep show movie. It really does. I honestly could see the Crypt Keeper just kind of laughing in between, you know, the short stories that you jump into that are so chilly. I mean, I've actually read through it twice, and I don't want to give away anything, and that's the hardest part right now, is because there are so many things that I want to talk about, but I'm not going to spoil any of this. The book is on sale right now, and I know that they were running a special signed edition that was going to be available, but I don't know if that is up right now. Because I don't think they've gotten all the signatures back, but that might be a possibility. I'm not sure what they've posted up already, but it is available online purchase. Steve Resnick, Tim, is got a story in this too. I mean, the names on this are like stunning. Warren Hammond, Gary Jonas, Paul Campion, Sean Eds. Yeah, just Kevin Dillmore. Oh, Kevin. Yeah, so you need to... I'll put a link so you can go purchase your book in the page and on the post and just about everywhere. I will be sharing this on the 5280 page. I want to... And I've thought about this and I may tease him with it. I may read one or two of the chapters and give that to them so that they can put out there like an audiobook format for one of the stories, because the Steve Resnick Tem story is so creepy and so well done. And of course, Kevin J. Anderson's story, the final story in the book, is absolutely riveting. Yes, so check it out. It Came From the Multiplex, 80s Midnight Chillers, available now since we don't get our horror con. This is as close as you can come. Yeah, something like that. And that is this week's Shakedown. If you have any other ideas or questions, please, by all means, shoot me a direct message. Or if there's something that you would like my take on, hit me up. I'm always open to spreading my knowledge, my take, my perspective, as it were. Moving on. Continuing with TV and talking about this. I didn't get to it. When I was talking about it earlier with the DC fandom, but the Superman and Lois tease the new suit that Superman's going to be wearing. I mean, the fandom thing and all that. Superman, I'm still on the fence about how I feel about Superman and Lois, the two kids that they'll be playing parents to. There have been other stills released. It looks like it's a page right out of Smallville. I mean, they really look like they're kind of trying to resurrect Smallville and take it into, you know, the new CW universe without, you know, Tom Welling and everybody else. So I'm still on the fence. Everybody that's coming back for Superman and all of the CW shows, because we get Flash, we get all of them. I'm curious to see what this new world is going to look like. We didn't get a lot of the season finales. Legends actually has been very entertaining and is kind of like the dark horse right now in my book for CW hits. And Flash loses, you know, a little bit of ground. I mean, this season was a little bit better, and it was much more, I don't know. Crisis was great, but it was what everything that happened after Crisis that just was kind of meh. So, I mean, I love that Black Lightning and Supergirl are in the Arrowverse. They're all on the same Earth, and I'm good with that. So, let's just see what they do with it. Yeah, that's my opinion. This caught my eye, and I kind of laughed about it. Because you know what? I honestly didn't think about it until I read it. But Family Guy was without Adam West as the mayor for the town. And I never really considered it like a crucial role, but I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, Adam West has been passed away a few years now. I want to say he passed away in 2017. I'd have to double check that, but evidently they've been without a mayor. So they decide to draft up Sam Elliott, and I cannot think of a better person to be mayor. Of course, when they originally approached Sam Elliott, he was kind of put off by the idea, because how they had styled it was as if it was truly Sam Elliott, just like they had Adam West. It was Adam West that was mayor. So Sam Elliott was kind of a little put off by the idea of playing himself as now the mayor. So the whole Family Guy crew kind of stepped back and like, you know what, you're right, that was Adam West's shtick, so let's go in an opposite direction. So the character is loosely based on Sam Elliott. Of course, he's got his burly voice, and God loves Sam Elliott. You know what, God bless America, God bless Johnny Cash, God bless Sam Elliott, because the man is just burly. I just love Sam. The voice alone just gets to you, and just to see the man in person, he's just fun. He's genuine. Love Sam Elliott. Always down with me getting me some Sam Elliott. That sounded dirty. Anyway, so it's the 19th season that's coming up for Family Guy, which I can't believe it's been 19 seasons already for it. But I guess that is the case. It does premiere September 27th, and I guess that's when we'll see how Sam Elliott is rendered out as a cartoon character. I mean, it's not like Sam Elliott doesn't have anything to do. I mean, it's odd not to see Sam Elliott in Westerns, but every time I look at him, all I can think of is The Big Lebowski and him sitting in a bowling alley somewhere, just waiting to, you know, bestow his wisdom to somebody. Anyone who'll listen. Yeah. Also, in kind of animated comic book news, Batman the Long Halloween two-part animated film adaption has been confirmed and is slated for a 2021 release that is not soon enough, in my opinion. This should have been done right after Killing Joke. There's no reason why this absolute piece of brilliance should not have been converted already into an animated film. They are saying that it is going to be kind of like a two-parter, because it is absolutely and so extensive of a story, but it was actually done by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, and Tim Sale's artwork on this is inspiring, and it is it fits so well to this story. And there's so many villains that show up in this story. And I don't even know what they're going to do. I don't want to wreck it. But this is kind of like one of my must reads for a trade paperback. If you have not read The Long Halloween, it's right in there with The Dark Knight Returns, Hush, Court of Owls. This is an epic story. And the art is just as epic, if not more so. I mean, they even did a figure line. Of course, they've done a figure line on everything, but they did a figure line for this story that didn't even do it enough justice. The Joker out of the line is creepy as all hell, because just the way Tim did his teeth when he smiles are all like uneven and jagged and just kind of creepy clowny, and it is just so good. Even comes with a little Santa hat, fits right on his head, got a magnet in it. But this should have been adapted a long freaking time ago. So the fact that they're finally just getting to it, and maybe I know that they got consumed with their other series running along everything with, you know, the new 52 and then finally wrapping up that huge arc that's been going on for the last, you know, 5-6 years or so. So I know we have made fun of him multiple times, but in this story, Calendar Man, that's right up there with Polka Dot Man and Condiment Man, Calendar Man is one of the villains. He does know the identity, of course, of the Holiday Killer, and Batman's trying to get it out of him, but he's just like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to villains in this, because you've got like Two-Face, Joker, Scarecrow, Mad Hatter, Poison Ivy, Riddler. I mean, it is a cavalcade of villains. It ran for 13 issues, and each one I was absolutely glued to. Of course, this was back in like 96, so when this first came out, and it was just so, I mean, Sale outdid himself on this. I mean, he honestly, in my opinion, he could have retired right then at this point and just walked away, just said, nope, it's never going to get any better than that. I am done. And I would have been happy with that, because that was such an iconic book. So well done. Of course, like I mentioned before, it is going to be a two-parter. Long Halloween Part 1 is slated to arrive somewhere in summer of 2021, followed by the second part in the fall. I'm sure as we get closer to dates next year. Ugh, really? Next year? Yeah, that sucks. Oh, well. Next year, at least something to look forward to, besides it being 2021. I will stay on top of this, because this was, in fact, I would go out and pick up these issues. If you can't find the trade, the comics are the next best thing. I don't think they're too pricey at this point, especially for 96. It's really hard to say on that one. But I would check it out. Also, in DC news, and speaking of the fandom, they've been hinting at Justice League Dark going over to HBO Max, and that's fine. Sorry, dropped my pen. And that's fine. I wouldn't mind seeing an HBO Dark series, but the clincher on this one for me is who they have as Constantine. You can't really do a Constantine less Justice League Dark. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't. No, it doesn't happen. So the question is, who do you get in there? My initial, of course, is Matt Ryan, who is on the Legends, who's done an incredible job as Constantine. Did it on his own show, is doing it on Legends, and continues to be, in my mind, the staple of what John Constantine is. And as much as I love what Keanu Reeves did for the character in the movie, especially with, you know, limited to no exposure to the character, he did a great representation of it. But as far as like the day-to-day and just how I would expect a John Constantine to be, Matt's got it down. I mean, he is spot on what, in my mind, I would envision as Constantine. Same thing for like Kevin Conroy as Batman. I mean, the voice works, and Matt has the voice, has the mannerisms, has the attitude, everything that I would come to expect from Constantine. And if you're going to do a Justice League Dark series without this man, you're a bunch of fools. Just flat rat, you're fools. I'm not going to watch your show. I don't care. As much as I'm enticed by the fact that it's a Justice League Dark and I never thought I would see anything like that, I don't care. You can give it to me for free. I still won't watch it. But also, maybe they can't get Matt. And what happens to Constantine on Legends of Tomorrow? Do we see the end of that character in the show? Because that is kind of one of the high points, in my opinion, of the characters that are left. We lost the Atom this season, so now we're going to lose Constantine, potentially? I'm surprised he stuck around this long, because he's definitely been the high point. I just think the character and the actor Matt are spectacular. So, don't you dare do a Justice League Dark without him as Constantine. I will be pissed. In other news, TV news, this one came as a shock to me, because this was a huge hit in every single circle that I hung out in, whether it be comics, movies, TV, just any con environment. The Venture Brothers was probably one of the most raved and quoted cartoons in a long while. And now it has been canceled. Adult Swim has decided not to bring it back. So why? I guess the series, and this shows how fast it has gone by. It has actually done 80 episodes across 7 seasons. So it has been around a lot longer than I even thought for a moment. Because I was just like, has it really been that long? But yeah, that's how long the Venture Brothers has been going. And I know that they've had different, you know, takes on things, and they were also looking for different like benchmarks to hit. Clayton, who I used to work with over at Time Warp, was huge Venture Brother fan, and he would give me the lowdown on everything, and just was an absolute fan for this series. But I'm a little disappointed. Why cancel this? It's not doing you any harm. You're not losing any money on this series. And you know what? It's funny. At least, if anything, let them go out on a high point. Let them finish this. That would make give them the final hurrah. At least let them go out on a top. That would make me happy, even though you've canceled it, bastards. What is Adult Swim thinking? I mean, are they just going to do reruns of Batman the Animated Series now? And I mean, Robot Chicken. I finally watched that recently. It's not the Robot Chicken of old. There's some funny stuff. I miss the Star Wars side of it. I know that they can't do Star Wars anymore, but I really do miss the Star Wars stuff. And yeah, just not the same. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Also, kind of in the same vein of being canceled, Red was a huge fan of this show, still is, but Anna Faris is leaving Mom, which I think came as a shock to everyone on Mom as it did to the people at large. After 8 seasons, funny lady Anna Faris is taking off to pursue other interests. Hopefully they pay, because at least I know with Mom it was a steady paycheck, because the show was a hit. Everybody loved it, and it was funny. It really was. And now, without her, I mean, she's kind of the linchpin to the story. I mean, it is all based on her. So, are you just going to have a bunch of, you know, rehabbers trying to not drive each other insane and concentrate on the 12 steps? I don't know, but we wish her luck. I don't think there's anything. I don't think the show's got legs without her, to be honest with you, because it is dependent on her, because that is a crucial character. It's like 2.5 Men. Okay, you get rid of Charlie Sheen, you got, you know, a man and a half. And Ashton Kutcher, I mean, he gave it everything he could. You just can't replace Charlie. And the same thing goes for Anna Faris's character, Jenny. I think it was Jenny. I always forget her name. But it just, I can't. And I know that everybody, it was Chrissy. Christy, excuse me. Christy was the name of her character. And I know this whole show and the character were basically suited and tailored to her. So for her to bounce out at even, and it was just before filming was going to start. So that means they have all of their scripts. They have everything set to go. And Anna drops this kind of bomb. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe she's got some big deal brewing that nobody knows about. She's under a shush order. What else is going on? Oh, now I don't know. You may not know this, but I do kind of have a secret infatuation that I try not to talk about, and I touched on it a few times every once in a while, but huge fan of pinball. I love the cabinets. I love the mechanics. I love the intricacies. I mean, some machines are more forgiving than others when it comes to play, because I mean, there was one game that no matter what it goes straight down the center, right out of the chute, and you just lose the ball. You don't even get a replay. You always used to piss me off. I wanted to play that game, but it was just something about how that machine was anchored that the ball would just shoot out and straight down the middle. Couldn't do a thing. Couldn't even double flip to try and get it out. Anyway, I saw this and instantly I started thinking, okay, I need to get it. The Avengers Infinity Quest pinball machine was announced by Marvel and it is being produced by Stern Pinball. And the cabinet and the colors look, oh, this is a comic book come to life. Wait, isn't that what the movie was? Anyway, the pictures that I've seen of the cabinet obviously do not do it justice, because we've got the side and internal workings, and it looks like some great ramps, couple loops, but oh my god, the intricacy of this cabinet and machine are, oh, I must have. So must have. The problem is, the manufacturer suggested retail price. Now, this is suggested. The Pro model, which is just a measly $6,100. The premium model, this premium, so that means more loops, more flips, more twists, more lights. That one is $7,700. And then, of course, the limited edition, which there have been a couple of limited edition cabinets out there. The Star Wars one, the X-Men one, and the Ghostbusters one are all ones on my bucket list. At some point, I will own you, and I will have you set up in my house. I know that just probably makes a lot of people cringe. Red's one of them, because what do you need that just taking up space? But it's just, there's just something fun about a pinball cabinet in the dining room. Or the living room, wherever you got space. It's not like you even use your kitchen table anymore. The kitchen table is where you put the mail and stuff you don't want to carry all the way to the kitchen or to the living room. That's all the dining room table is for these days. So why not put cabinets in there? And for a measly $9,100, $9,199, you can have the limited edition model, which probably signed by somebody. They hadn't said who. But, yeah, just, you know, shy of a used car. Actually, that is probably most used cars. That's actually almost like a full new car, depending upon your make and model. But I must have this. The Infinity Quest pinball machines, I think, are right now only available on a pre-order. And the limited edition is limited to only 500 units globally. The limited version includes additional unique features such as an exclusive mirrored back glass, exclusive custom-themed cabinet artwork, and custom autographed bottom arc, exclusive custom art blades, upgraded audio, because, you know, you can put more of an amp in that son of a bitch, anti-reflective pinball glass, a shaker motor, and sequential numbered plaque. Of course, you got to have a numbered plaque because it's signed. I know it is ridiculous. I know it is over the top, and that's why I love it. And that is why, at one point, I will make it mine. I'll put my Thanos statues right up on top of it. It'll be perfect. Put some cauldrons, have those smoke. pinball party at my house. As soon as I get it, I'll be sure to invite you over. Speaking of games, Super Mario 3D All-Stars announced for Switch includes Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy. This is all in celebration of the Mario's 35th anniversary. Nintendo's announced all of these titles to be included for the Switch. So this should be released this week, actually, September 18th. So, I mean, to go along with Mario's 35th anniversary, this is perfect. And I can't think of a better platform for it to be on because the Switch is absolutely beautiful. It is fun. And it's, if you can find one, worth the money. Sold out across town. And, of course, you've got, you know, Luigi's Haunted Mansion 3, Samurai Jack, which, you know, of course, is a must for everybody. Not just Xbox players, but you Switch players as well. They're also going to do some updated controls and other stuff. Yeah, so I didn't realize just how long Mario's been around. I mean, I guess 35 years has gone by kind of in a blink. So, all right. Game on. So go and get this special edition. And I think there's also another special edition 35th anniversary Mario themed Switch that is also available, which means you'll finally get your Switch if you've been waiting. This is probably the best way to do it. You know what that means. It is time for the restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. Yes. Every podcast, I take a moment to spread some light on a restaurant that has helped me survive the COVID. As we've been locked down, I do not want to cook every single day. It just is too much. As much as I enjoy it and as therapeutic as it is, and I have come up with some doozy recipes and some excellent food, which maybe I'll even post pictures. I do take pictures of it just to save it so I can show people that, hey, look, I am a capable adult. But I don't want to cook every day, and I, you know, should eat something other than, like, chicken. But I do take a moment to acknowledge and to also kind of enlighten everyone as we go further and further into the season, trying to help the local restaurants to stay afloat, to stay open, and to keep them going strong, because they are the backbone of our neighborhood, of our communities. And if I have been there and I tell you that I like it, it is because it is good, and it is because I do genuinely like it. It's not something just I made up or threw a dart and like, okay, we'll find something in this part of town. No, it is legitimate. And you may even run into me there. Someone actually did run into me at Santiago's the other day because I had to get my breakfast burrito, which I talked about the other couple few podcasts ago. Ran into me at Santiago's, so you know who you are. It was good to see you. Bump elbows. So anyway, this week's restaurant that helped me survive the COVID, Lucille's. Holy crap seed. This is some of the best dining I can possibly imagine, and it's wonderful, just comfort food. Actually, it's a Cajun Creole breakfast and lunch kind of, and they describe it as a cozy house. Now, it depends on which part of town you go in. There's three of them. There's one, of course, in Boulder, Denver, and Longmont. I haven't been to the Boulder location because it is always a full house. It's worse than snooze trying to get in there for the wait list. The one in Denver is not as bad. And actually, the one in Longmont the other day when we went, there really wasn't that much of a wait. I think it was like 5 minutes. We got in and seated really, really quickly. Of course, they're doing the video menu. So you scan the QRL code and you can order directly off of that. It is probably the best. I mean, breakfast is already kind of the best meal of the day. Breakfast works at all times. But this is just happy little breakfast comfort food, and you just feel so happy as you eat it and happy as you leave. But the best part of the happiness is the beignets. They are delectable. They are just covered in powder, sugary goodness that just, it goes so, so good with the coffee. And yeah, we kind of pigged out on these last time we were there. I think we ordered like 2 full plates of these and just went to town. They're fresh out of the oven. They're hot. They're just fried doughy goodness of pure flavor and Of course, I just went with like the simple Eggs Benedict after that. But their menu is very, well, it's limited right now, but usually it's a fair amount of options to choose from, and it is probably will become like your favorite breakfast place. The one in Denver is located off of 275 South Logan Street, which is really close, center of town. The one in Longmont is a little bit more out of the way, depending upon if you're, you know, in the Longmont Boulder area. I'd avoid the Boulder location just because it's so damn difficult to get in there, and I don't want to waste all day if I'm doing brunch just to get into the joint. So do yourself a favor, go over to the one in Longmont. It's just like an additional 10-15 minutes to get over there, and it's located off of 518 Kimbar Street in Longmont. I know right now that they are limited hours, usually just open for breakfast and, you know, small get-togethers, but they do dine in and curbside pickup. There is no delivery for these guys, at least not that I have seen, for either the Longmont or the Denver location. But this should be a must if you're looking for something to kill a Saturday. Since we don't have any cons, this is where you want to go. This is where you want to spend an afternoon, have some beignets, hang out with some people, chat it up. It'll be just like, you know, a con. And they do have mimosas. So, you know, if you're so inclined to skip the coffee and just go straight to the booze, which I recommend, that's where you want to go. That's how you're going to do it. And that is my restaurant that helped me survive the COVID. Thank you, Lucille's. Love the beignets. What else? I think that's about it. I know a full couple of weeks, the world continues to spin. The Geekverse is going along with the punches best as it can. We did take a moment to acknowledge 9/11, which was, you know, every year, you know, got to stop and reflect on that. So understand. But other than that, it has been relatively quiet. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, days, we'll see some more news trickle in for movies and TV shows as we start to kick off the television season. I'll be sure to enlighten you on the latest from The Masked Singer, because I just love that show. Yeah, so that's it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Yeah, more so for listening. And be sure to like, share, send us some comments. I'm always open, but I appreciate you guys hitting the like button and sharing with your friends and taking your time out of your day to give me a listen. So I appreciate it very much, and we'll see you next week because we are here for your entertainment. Yeah, that sounds right. We're here for your entertainment. Absolutely. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.